Right, so just a short introduction. So I'm working as a researcher with the Wikimedia Foundation, and I'm so part of the strategic team of the foundation, and I'm also coordinating the research outreach effort at Wikimedia within the scope of the Wikimedia Research Committee, a body that is trying to bridge between the scientific community and Wikimedia, with a particular focus on open science. But today, I'm going to wear the altmetrics hat, and I'm very happy to have the opportunity to talk about altmetrics in the context of open access, to see in what sense altmetrics can say something important to open access, and in what sense altmetrics can learn from open access. So the focus of my talk is going to be on impact and what it means to measure impact, how we measure impact, and in particular, what it means for measures of impact to be transparent. So I'd like to start with a number of examples non-transparent impact metrics. I'd like to know how many of you are on Twitter. Okay, so how many of people who are on Twitter are familiar with clout? How many of people are familiar with clout? Clout.com? Ian? Okay, interesting. So clout is one of the most prominent examples of services that try and operationalize the notion of impact of a Twitter user. So if you register with Clout, you're welcomed by this screen that tells you, welcome back. Your Clout score is steady at 44, which is supposed to be fantastic news if you're a Twitter user. Actually, I've only joined Twitter recently, and I suppose having a clout score of 44 is really great news. But the point that I'm trying to make is that this metric of influence is a metric of influence that doesn't allow you to understand what is actually being measured. So if you look at the definition of clout score, you realize that clout score is based on three different types of indicators. So true reach is a measure of how many people you influence. Amplification is a measure of how much you influence them. And network score is a measure of how influential they are. So in particular, if you look at the definition of true reach, you see the true reach is based on the number of people you influence. Now, unfortunately, if you look into the documentation of Clout, there's no way you can find out what it means to be a person you are influencing. So it's kind of surprising that we have a score that's measuring your influence without actually transparently indicating what is actually being measured. Nevertheless, you have a fantastic way of tracking your influence over time. So this is this is my clout score over time. So as you see, I'm a really proud Twitter user with a consistent score above 43, whatever that means. And among other things, I've also discovered that I'm influential in topics such as Wikipedia, crowdsourcing, Italy, and bedroom, which I think is very flattering. So why I chose the example of Clout? I think there's something crucial about the way in which Clout is being built and the way in which opacity is being used in Clout. And the idea is that When I say metric opacity, I refer to metrics that are disconnected from the data sources they refer to and disconnected from what they actually measure. Even though a metric like a clout score is disconnected from the actual data source, it allows me nevertheless to do a bunch of things. So I can make a metric-based inferences. I can reason about metrics. I could compare my score over time, compare whether I increase or decrease my influence. And I can rank other items based on that metric. So there's a bunch of opportunities that I can harness by using this metric, even though the metric doesn't actually disclose what it refers to. And opaque metrics are actually ubiquitous. They're much more common than we may think. So if you think of PageRank, so PageRank is known to be an algorithm used by Google whose specifications have been published back in 1998 with the famous paper by Brin and Page. But actually, specifications only disclose part of the algorithm. So it's a semi-public algorithm that is susceptible of a number of arbitrary adjustments. Possibly the most famous example of these arbitrary adjustments is the 2002 case of Google versus Scientology, some of you may be familiar with. So in 2002, Scientology used the DMCA, so the a law that in the US regulates copyright in online matters. And by appealing to DMCA, they managed to force Google to remove anti-Scientology links, or to change the rankings of these links from their index. So this is an example of how a matrix supposed to be fully specified is actually susceptible of being manipulated or modified as a function of a number of factors. And if you think of the entire search engine optimization industry, what they're doing, they're trying to reverse engineer those parts of PageRank that are not public. So they're trying to maximize the ranking of a given website by reverse engineer what can be inferred about this metric. And there's a famous case of problem that SEO people are facing called the Google Dance. And the Google Dance refers to short-term fluctuation in PageRank, which are really scary for many website providers, because a Google Dance can totally mask you from search engine results, and that can have obviously a major impact on traffic and visits. And there's a number of search engine optimization strategies to try and control for this Google Dance. So again, another example of a matrix is advertised as being transparent or semi-transparent, but actually with a dark side that is opaque, and that lends itself to a lot of darker or obscure operations. And well, the third example, possibly most relevant example of an opaque metric is the journal impact factor. So we know the journal impact factor is defined publicly via this algorithm that basically says that you divide the number of citations that a given journal gets in the two previous years of the year in which the impact factor is calculated, and you divide this number of citations for the total number of citable items that were published by that journal in the two previous years, right? Now, it sounds like a totally transparent and public definition of an algorithm, but actually, what matters here is what goes into the denominator. So, as probably those of you who are dealing with impact factor know, what counts as a citable item is a matter of negotiation between Thomson Reuters and the publisher. At the same time, Thomson Reuters has been consistently trying to fight self-citation. And so over time, self-citation has moved from the problem of how to control for authors citing themselves to the problem of how to reduce journals citing their own papers, because this is considered as a non-virtuous way of increasing impact. So there's something similar here to the Google Dance. There's a journal impact factor dance, which is basically something scary, not for website providers, but for editorial boards. And if you're an editorial board and you care about impact factor, you'll have policies to maximize your journal impact factor by publishing more review papers, for example, or by negotiating with Thomson Reuters what counts as a citable item. At the same time, there's a number of compelling examples from niche disciplines. Unfortunately, I don't have data to present because I didn't manage to access them in time for my presentation, but there's a case of a number of journals in some areas of computational social sciences in which, given the small number of journals that publish papers in that area, and given the current policy of Thomson Reuters to discount self-citation that is basically based on same journal citations, There are major problems that these fields are facing because of policies that are introduced by Thomson Reuters to control such citation. So again, an opaque metric that make it harder to know exactly what's going on behind the curtains of the calculation of these impact indicators. There are some benefits. So there are some reasons why many service providers use opaque metric. The first reason I want to suggest is that an opaque metric increases trust in the metric itself. So as many have mentioned before, we use impact factor as a common currency. And even though we don't really understand what it means to have a given impact factor, we don't know the nitty-gritty of the algorithm calculation, referring to an impact factor allows us to trust the metric itself without caring about what it stands for, what data it's actually measuring. And this in turn means that we have an easily consumable proxy of impact, an indicator of impact we can easily reuse in conversations about impact, like my website has a page rank of 7, I increased my cloud score by 2 points, I have 12 papers published in journals with a high impact factor, depending on the discipline in which we are. And one of the other arguments is that with an opaque metric, you're in better control of gaming, because by not disclosing how you're calculating impact, you're making it harder for people to gain the system. At the same time, metrics that are opaque imply that in many cases we cannot verify or reproduce these metrics. So there's a lack of verifiability. There's a problem of metric lock-in, because we know that once there's a massive adoption of a single metric, it's very hard to persuade the scholarly community to adopt new metrics or look into other ways of measuring impact. And there's also a problem of metric abuse. So the typical problem of applying impact factor that are defined at journal level at article level. So concluding that by the fact of being published in a journal with a high impact factor, an article itself should have more impact than other articles. So I'd like to contrast this idea of opaque metrics with the idea of transparency that is one of the aspects that the Altmetrics initiative is currently focusing on. And I'll try to show how the open access movement could benefit from this idea of transparency in impact metrics. So Altmetrics, I don't need to give an introduction. Ian stole 50% of my talk. So you can find more information on altmetrics.org, but in a nutshell, altmetrics are a set of alternative measures of the impact of a broad range of scientific artifacts, including papers, but also data sets, slides, and other artifacts that as researchers we produce on a regular basis. And these measures are based on large-scale data sources that we can find on the web, such as social media, microblogging, wikis, and so on and so forth, news, online news websites, etc. So this is a summary of the benefits that all metrics offer compared to traditional metrics. They provide transparent and verifiable indicators of impact that are linked, that are explicitly referring to data sources and allow you to drill down into these data sources in a way that traditional metrics do not allow. They provide real-time, multidimensional indicators of impact, and indicators of impact are also semantically rich. So they provide you, as we saw before, information about the context in which a paper is being mentioned or scholarly content is being reused. And it also allows us to track references and reuse of scholarly contents not only inside of the academia, but also outside of the academia. And this is an aspect on which I'll come back in a moment. So we started to see a number of altmetric services that are harnessing the first APIs that are available, exposing rich usage data, such as the Mendeley API, the PLOS API, Site-U-Like as an API, Twitter, Wikipedia have API that can be used for tracking altmetrics. And this is just a series of examples, none of which, I'm afraid, is has yet become the single go-to point for altmetrix. They're all trying to cover parts of altmetrix, but you can check them out and see what they're doing. And I thought I'd give a shameless plug of ReaderMeter, which is a wrapper built around the Mendeley API that basically displays readership information based on the Mendeley database at author level. So as an author, you can fill in your name and you can get, in most cases, a good representation of your readership per paper, and information such as the geographic location, the discipline, and the academic status of your readers. Another example that Ian previously mentioned is the one of altmetric.com, which is measuring conversations about scholarly content in a variety of sources, Twitter, Facebook, blogs, and news. At the same time, we are trying to develop infrastructure and new technological solutions for altmetrix, but also advocacy and research about altmetrix. And one of the common problems you're facing is why should we trust altmetrix compared to the more respected bibliometric? And in particular, how do we validate altmetrix-based impact? And that's a very hairy question and very tricky problem to address, because the standard solution that people have found so far is to show that download rates have a very strong correlation with citations. And in most cases, when you find such correlation, probably means that the metric itself is not very interesting, because there's another metric that does the same job. So possibly a non-result, like a lack of correlation between traditional metrics and new metrics, is a source of, should suggest at least that there are areas of impact that traditional metrics are not covering. And in particular, I think that altmetrix has the potential to help redefine or at least broaden the notion of impact in a way that we believe could be beneficial to the open access movement. So first of all, we can try and measure the impact of research artifacts outside of academia. So by focusing on a larger number of data sources, we can try and see, for example, in which cases papers are being used as part of syllabi by college students, or massively reused in industry. At the moment, we don't have ways of tracking this use. And if we have if we have data sources that are exposing this information, we'll be able to provide transparent indicators of how content is being reused in this context, so outside of the academia. But at the same time, there are some proposals more on the policymaking side to try and persuade funders and evaluation agencies that we should rethink impact and focus on reuse metrics. And we think that altmetrix represent an outstanding opportunity for policymakers to measure and to give meaning in terms of impact to reuse, which is something that for ages has not been considered as a relevant notion in the scholarly communication system. And if you're not familiar with this paper by Cameron Nealon, I suggest you take a look at it. It tries to articulate and define the idea of reuse metrics as impact metrics. So just to give an example and to wrap up, this is work that is being currently conducted by Daniel Mitchin, who is our warrior at Wikimedia to try and connect the open access and open science movement with Wikimedia. And Daniel compiled this list of citation organized by publishers in Wikipedia articles. So what you see is the absolute number of citations that currently we have in Wikipedia for journals published by different publishers. And what you see is that if you shift to a different set of metrics, like the number of media that are reused in Wikipedia, you end up with a pretty different landscape. So it's really too early to suggest that this is going to be the single metric that funders will care about in the future, but it's definitely something going on here that we think funders and valuation agencies should be should care about and realize the potential of reuse has been entirely neglected by the current scholarly communication system. So to wrap up and to conclude on the question of the anxiety, the impact anxiety in the open access movement. So my suggestion is that we should probably stop worrying about impact. And that means that we should try and rethink what impact means. And this is a tremendous opportunity for open access to help redefine impact in a way that is helping us engineer new ways of changing science. So using metrics as a solution to change science in a direction that we think is going to be beneficial for society and for scientists. And in the short term, what can be done, if you're a publisher, if you're a content provider, you can create APIs. So you can expose not only your contents, published papers, supplementary data, slides, media, any kind of content that you publish, but also usage data. So data that you track about how many people visit, download, reuse your contents. And this way, you can help us build tools that measure this impact and can hopefully try and support the cause of open access using these new indicators. So thanks very much. If you have questions, I'd be happy to hear your answers.
Could you or Daniel explain how you measured reuse, or how he measured reuse in Wikipedia?
Okay, so the first graph was actually the number of times a Wikipedia page was pointing to the DOI that belongs to that particular publisher. The second graph is, this is from the English Wikipedia, the first graph. The second graph is from Wikimedia Commons, where the files are being stored that are being used in Wikipedia and other Wikimedia articles. And here the same. We basically just look at the DOI that belongs to the publisher and count the number of times that the DOIs, that such files link to DOIs. So in principle, you would only expect open access publishers being linked, but non-open access publishers are still being linked from images that use data from non-open sources, or where an image from a non-open source has been redrawn or something like this. But I would really love to talk with you here on how we could increase the right-hand part, because especially in the first image you see that there is still a dominance of the non-open access publishers, so they are more referenced on Wikipedia simply because most of them are more have been around for a longer time, and altogether they still produce more content. But this file reuse, like images, videos, whatever you have in the supplementary materials, that's something we could easily work on together.
And if you can comment on that as well, I think it's quite disheartening that the only working service that allows you to track and identify open access media at the moment is Springer Images. So it's a service run by a mostly closed access publisher. And I think there's an incredible opportunity for open access publishers to develop similar services to facilitate the reuse of media that are open access and open licensed.
So there's a fair amount of, not a huge amount, a fair amount of experimentation going on with these different groups developing their own altmetric engine. And given what we heard a couple of presentations back about the difference between federated or centralized, what is your thinking about how it's going to pan out? Is there going to be a lot of different services all measuring metrics in slightly different ways, or is it going to consolidate into one new Web of Science type of entity?
Right, yeah. So my feeling is that I probably disagree with Ian that what some of these services are doing are providing centralized matrix. So I think what some of these services are doing, like in the case of Total Impact, they're trying to move the first steps into the area of aggregating data or providing a common infrastructure on which other applications can build metrics. So in a way, these are enabling technology. I mean, some of these technologies are definitely trying to provide metrics. Another part of these technologies are actually enabling matrix-based applications or matrix-based technologies. So I think at some point there is a need of some sort of infrastructure to allow us to get a centralized coverage of data in order to be able to build metrics. If the metrics themselves are then built in a centralized or totally decentralized fashion, it's a separate question. But I think there's still a need of an infrastructure to bring together this data.
And I guess standards are going to be needed to define the metrics.
Precisely.
I think what you will see is the large players will move towards bringing product to market and try and sell into their existing market spaces. So like Thomson, I think, has got a product called Insights, which is meant to be an analytic tool on the citation graph. So I don't think there'll be one player, but the players who are in the market now will try and promote their own individual products to try and squeeze more revenue out of the people that they're already getting revenue from.
Okay. Well, thanks very much. Can we thank all the speakers again?